Nancy Drew is smart, spunky, and cool under pressure, but she's got nothing on the woman who shaped her personality. This hour, we'll find out about the very first ghostwriter to write Nancy Drew books. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. When the Nancy Drew books were first published, the name of the author on the cover was Carolyn Keene. Many authors wrote Nancy Drew books over the years, but Mildred Benson of Ledora, Iowa, wrote 23 of the first 30 books in the series and really shaped the character we know and love. This hour, her true story, which is even more fascinating than a dime novel. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Nancy Drew has been unraveling mysteries and entertaining and inspiring readers for many generations now. And as every Nancy Drew reader knows, the author of the books was always identified as Carolyn Keene. This hour, we'll find out about the very first woman to write under the name Carolyn Keene. She has a true life story even more fascinating than the fiction she created, and her name was Mildred Wirt Benson. With me today is Julie Rubini. She's author of the new book for young readers, Missing Millie Benson, The Secret Case of the Ghostwriter and Journalist. Hello, Julie.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be able to share and enlighten everyone on Millie's life.
That's great. And Carolyn Dyer is also here with us today. She's Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa. She held the first ever Nancy Drew conference at the University of Iowa back in 1993, and she co-edited the book, Rediscovering Nancy Drew, is perhaps the world's leading expert on the life of Mildred Benson. And this hour, we're going to talk about Mildred Benson's life. Carolyn, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And I want to go back to where things started in Ledora, Iowa. And Julie, I'll let you start us off. Millie Augustine. Augustine was her original last name. Tell me a little bit about her as a child.
First of all, I'd like to say hello to Carolyn. Carolyn and I met when I was in Iowa conducting my research. So good morning, Carolyn, to you. And as far as Millie, she grew up in Ledora, a small town. Her father was the town doctor. Her mother assisted her father in his practice. And although he had an office just up the way from their home, he made house calls, as one would do in the early 1900s. Millie had an older brother, Mel, and the two of them were left with a lot of time on their hands to develop their imaginations and creativity, and Millie filled that time with playing outdoors a lot. She was always very athletic, and she also played with paper dolls, which she later wrote a story about the fact that playing with those paper dolls served as the beginnings of her creating stories.
Well, and they were also sort of a break with how people would characterize her as a child. She was not what anyone would have called a girly girl.
She was not at all, and she felt throughout her life. It was suggested that she was a feminist, and she never really considered herself as one. She just felt from a very early age that girls should be able to do everything that boys could do. And that the same held true for women. And she continued to live by that belief throughout her life.
Now, as she was growing, you talked about her making up stories with those paper dolls. She also started writing as a child. Tell me about that.
She did. She started submitting to papers and story papers from an early age. And she was first published when she was 11 years old, which was very validating for her because her father wanted her to follow in his footsteps in medicine. And so he, although he didn't discourage her, he wanted to have her prove the fact that she could indeed become a published writer, and having that validation when she was just 11 years old was a great start to her long career as a writer and journalist.
The fact that he wanted her to become a doctor is striking, considering that this was a time when very few women became doctors.
Very true, and very few women were, or I shouldn't say very few, let's say that when she entered college, the University of Iowa, at the age of 17, perhaps one of the reasons it was close to her home in Ladora, it's about 45 minutes away, you would all know there in Iowa, but it also was a very progressive school in that it encouraged both males and females to attend the university. So I think that her father, what I understand, was fairly progressive, and the same with her mother. And so they encouraged her independence, and she had it from a very early age.
Well, I'm struck, Julie, by some of the pictures, and even more so by some of the writing that you share in the book from her very early writing career. Carolyn, I know that you've been collecting and adding things to the women's archives at the University of Iowa. There's an extensive Mildred Benson collection. Was she someone who documented her life? Did she save all of these things?
She saved a lot of things. She kept a ledger with information about everything she ever published. Unfortunately, it was given to a collector who has kept it secret for quite a few years. She kept all her books. She had a number of manuscripts for books that were not yet not ever published. And her mother kept considerable scrapbooks and lots of family pictures, which have recently come to the Iowa Women's Archives at the university.
So really a treasure trove of information about her life and about her time at the University of Iowa.
Right. She didn't provide much about her time there, but that's documented in some university things. She was in virtually every organization that she was eligible to join, and so there's information about those things. And there is also a partial draft of an autobiography that she was encouraged to write that I've been reading lately.
Oh, wow. Well, Carolyn just mentioned that Millie Benson was in, and I guess back then, Millie Augustine, was in almost every activity that she could be in college, which is not an overstatement by any means. And you share in the book a beautiful picture of her diving into the Iowa River. But tell me more about some of her extracurricular activities.
Well, it was just so fun to, again, sift through the archives and meet with Carolyn there at the University of Iowa Women's Archives, as well as to reach out to the University of Iowa for go through their yearbooks, as well as the Iowa State Historical Society, and the information that I found there, including old class listings from the time that Millie would have been attending the University of Iowa, to really kind of flesh out the manuscript and really give the reader a sense of what she was experiencing and what she was learning while she was at the University of Iowa. And you know, I don't know that Millie ever really rested in her life. And again, I think her father had a very strong work ethic and encouraged that, and that carried over into not only Millie's work but her play. When she was at the University of Iowa, she swam, she played on the basketball team, she served on the newspaper, she belonged to a variety of organizations. It's almost as if she literally threw herself into campus life there at the University of Iowa, and it was really fun to see how involved she was while she was there.
And she still managed to graduate in 3 years.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive. Carolyn, looking into her autobiography, does that give you insight into what her ambitions were at that time?
They were to write. She got a job right out of school working for the Clinton Herald as a society editor, which she thought was kind of boring, but it was a job. But she still aspired to write books comparable to the stories that she'd written as a child. And so she answered an ad in a publication called The Editor from the Stratemeyer Syndicate, which is the company that she ultimately wrote the Nancy Drew books for. And she went to New York the summer after the summer that she graduated from college, and interviewed with him, and he didn't have a job right then, but he said he'd get back to her, and he did before too long. And the first things that she wrote for him were in the Alice Emerson series.
And Alice Emerson, and Julie, you can jump in here too. This was a character that later Millie said was not a character she related to particularly well, but they were the first novels that she was writing. And do you know very much about this character, Carolyn?
No, I don't.
Okay, Julie.
Was Ruth Fielding, and I think that it was interesting that in what I read about Millie's writing for the Ruth Fielding series is that I think Millie actually was more similar to Ruth. It was, you know, an independent character, again, much like Millie. But it was the first that she began writing for the Stratemeyer Syndicate, and so that in itself might have been, it was a learning process for her, and she was attending graduate school at the University of Iowa. She was the first person to graduate with her master's in journalism from the University of Iowa.
Not the first woman.
First what person?
A first person.
First person.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Which is even more significant.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So her professors thought that she was actually writing her thesis while she was writing the Ruth Fielding series, and then having been writing for Edward Stratemeyer, and I can well imagine that as she was very dedicated to adhering to a deadline throughout her life, and that was reflected in the many letters that I would see back and forth between the Stratemeyer Syndicate and Millie, was that she was always very conscious of deadline. And so when Edward was considering writers for the new Nancy Drew series, then Millie was right there at the top of the list and given that opportunity. So.
Well, and let's take a step back and try to understand the Stratemeyer Syndicate, because this is such an interesting organization, and Edward Stratemeyer was at the head of it. He wanted to publish books for young readers, these dime novels, and he created a formula to make that happen. Tell me about it.
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Julie? Yes. Well, he was a ghostwriter himself, and he learned from the businesses that he worked for as to how the industry worked. And ultimately, he had so many opportunities that he could not keep up with the workload. So he created the syndicate, which was truly himself and ultimately an assistant. And he created this formula of establishing outlines for a series and creating the characters and having plot lines. And then he would farm them out, if you will, to ghostwriters who would sign an agreement stating that they would agree to write the book and accept a flat fee as
No royalties as the years went on, and no personal recognition. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Julie Rubini, author of Missing Millie Benson, The Secret Case of the Ghostwriter and Journalist, and Carolyn Dyer, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa. We're talking about the woman behind Nancy Drew. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about the woman who shaped Nancy Drew, the first woman to write a Nancy Drew novel. She wrote 23 of the first 30 Nancy Drew novels. Of course, they were published under the author name Carolyn Keene, but they were written by a woman named Mildred Wirt Benson, who hailed from Ladora, Iowa. And with me this hour, Julie Rubini, author of the new book for young readers, Missing Millie Benson, The Secret Case of the Ghostwriter and Journalist, and Carolyn Dyer, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa, and an expert on the life of Mildred Benson. And Carolyn, just during the break, we were talking about the fact that you had mentioned Mildred Benson's unpublished autobiography, which you have now had the opportunity to read. And I didn't realize how very recently this came into your hands. This is something that you just got in November.
Well, I didn't get it. The Iowa Women's Archives got it. Karen Mason, the head of the archives, was invited to the family home in November, and we went and looked at things and looked at things and looked at things. And at the end of the day, the family gave her materials that filled up her station wagon. The other thing that's interesting is Mildred Benson's existing papers at the time was the first collection in the Nancy Drew or in the Iowa Women's Archives, and it remains one of the most popular ones for people to look at.
Interesting. Well, and you, because now you've read this autobiography, now know that during her time at the University of Iowa, when she was getting her master's degree and writing those first books for the Stratemeyer Syndicate, she also worked for the Press Citizen in Iowa City.
Yes. Briefly, she worked there, and that's where she met her husband, who was the teletyper there at the time.
Asa Wirt.
Right.
All right. Her first husband.
First husband.
And again, I know I asked you already about her ambitions. When she was working as a journalist, and she continued and came back to journalism later in her life, so we'll talk more about that in a little while as well. But did she have, do we know, a role model as a novelist? Was there someone she wanted to be like? You can't think of the name? All right. But there was, she did have someone out there that she was dreaming of being like.
Actually, not so much a writer role model. She used the books that she read as a kid as the foil. They were many of them ones for girls anyway. She didn't want to write like those.
Interesting. Well, and so when she got these, we were talking about how the Stratemeyer Syndicate worked. And Edward Stratemeyer would himself create the outline. He would deliver it to Millie or whoever his ghostwriter was. And Julie, from that point, what was the process like?
Then typically there was a 4 to 6 week time frame, is my understanding, as to how long the ghostwriter had to actually write.
Wow, that's not very long.
No.
Have you seen these outlines? Do you know how extensive they were?
I have not seen outlines, and that seems to be a question. I had the opportunity to go to the New York Public Library in the Manuscripts and Archives Division and see the Stratemeyer records, which was just fascinating. I spent 2.5 days there. I would have loved to have had 2.5 weeks. It was truly the letters, again, back and forth between first Millie and then Edward, and there was limited amount of correspondence, and actually one of the letters was on display at the time because there was an exhibit about children's literature at the New York Public Library, and so there was a whole section on Edward Stratemeyer, which is a reflection of his significance within children's literature. And there is truly a plot twist here in Millie's life story and in the life story of Nancy Drew, in that Edward Stratemeyer became sick. He had a blood clot in his leg and died just 12 days after the first three Nancy Drew books were released in 1930. And there was not a succession plan. He did not have a son, and even though he was creating these series encouraging independent, spirit-filled young women, he was discouraging of his two daughters, Harriet and Edna, to become involved in the business. Harriet was allowed to edit manuscripts, but from their home. She was not allowed necessarily to go to the office in New York City. And I credit both Harriet and Edna, as well as Millie, for the survival of the Nancy Drew series. If it weren't for those three women, and particularly Harriet and Millie, Nancy Drew would still not be in existence today. And so Harriet took the helm and met the demands of the many publishers who were clamoring for not only Nancy Drew's, but all the other series that the Stratemeyer Syndicate was publishing at the time. And without losing a beat, Millie continued to write for the Nancy Drew series. The 23 of the first 30 that she wrote the first 1 through 7, 11 through 25, and then 30.
So did Harriet take over as writing the outlines?
Harriet did. Yes, and Edna was more of the business aspects. Harriet was much more involved in the business, and the correspondence is primarily between Harriet and Millie.
Interesting. Well, and I want to talk more about Harriet in a little while because she plays an important role in a court case much later on. But do we know, and Carolyn, I'll let you go first, do we know how much influence Millie had over shaping Nancy Drew and really making this character who she was?
She had a major influence. She has said that she wanted to make her to be perfect and everything that she was not, which is not quite accurate. but she was given an outline which named the characters and a thin plot line, and she filled out the characteristics of Nancy Drew. And at first, Edward Stratemeyer wasn't too happy with the character that she'd created. But the publisher, Grosset and Dunlap, did like it. And so her version of Nancy Drew is the one that went forward.
The character Nancy Drew, it's so interesting that you say Millie wanted her to be everything she wasn't. Julie, do you have something you'd like to add? I mean, I get the impression that Millie just had an incredible fondness for this character. She created a lot of characters over the years, but this one did seem to be special to her.
Well, it was very special, and it's noted that she sensed that it was special from the beginnings. That this again, you think this is a Millie herself is still just a graduate student when she's well, she was a graduate student when she started writing for the Stratemeyer Syndicate. She and Asa, who was an Associated Press telegraph operator, they moved from Iowa area to ultimately Cleveland and then to Toledo. And she began actually writing the Nancy Drews while she was in Lakewood, Ohio, just in greater Cleveland area. So she always had a fondness for Nancy Drew. But she has often stated that other characters that she created, as well as that she wrote other series that she wrote for, the one in particular is Penny Parker, is that which was a character that Millie created. She felt that Penny Parker was actually Millie's favorite character. I'm sorry to blow that, but
that's okay. That's good to know.
Penny Parker was a newspaper reporter, and her father was an editor, and like Nancy Drew, she didn't have a mother.
None of them seem to have mothers. That's definitely a pattern in many of these series. Julie, you were talking about the 4 to 6 week time period that Millie and the other ghostwriters had to write the books for the Stratemeyer Syndicate. In the back of your book, you publish a list of the books that she publishes each year, and it is astonishing how incredibly prolific she was.
Yes, and to think that she was doing so at a time when she was facing great challenge in her life, if you look at the time frame. And I thought it was important that it be listed not by series, but chronologically, so that it did emphasize how prolific that she was. In Millie's personal story, very sadly, Asa had suffered a series of strokes. And I was very honored.
And all of that happened shortly after their daughter was born, right?
Yes. So she has Peggy, her daughter. She has a husband who had, again, these strokes that he attempted to continue to work and then could not do so and was bedridden. And she had written about the fact that she literally was writing bedside while he was ill. So she's a caregiver for her husband. She's got young Peggy, and she's cranking out 13 to 14 books a year. It was just incredible to me. And then she takes up, because she has to be the breadwinner, she begins working for the Toledo Times and ultimately the Toledo Blade. And Associated Press was very kind to provide to me Asa's treasury card, which is his own life story. I did not include it in the book out of respect for any possible survivors, family members to Asa, because it reflects when he became ill and when he ultimately died. But it also shares where he was transferred and where he was at. So it is a reflection of where Millie was as well.
Fascinating. And I want to ask, she wrote so many different series, and she also published some books under her own name. When she was writing these series and trying to publish as herself, what was the pull and the push between trying to further her career as a known author and furthering these series, Julie?
I really believe it goes back to, again, that work ethic and that she always wanted to be a writer. So she was for any opportunities that may not have been afforded to her directly, that she was creating characters and having them published separately. So she wasn't writing exclusively for the Stratemeyer Syndicate. That was not anything. There was no agreement or contract, per se. There's some allusion to the fact that she would never reveal herself as being the Carolyn Keene. It was a generally understood thing. What within the agreement, it was stated that she could never write under any of the pseudonyms that she was for something else, you know, so she could not write as Carolyn Keene for anything other than the Nancy Drew series. She could not write as Alice Emerson under, you know, any other series, you know, other than the Ruth Fielding. So that was the agreement that she did sign her name to. But so I think it was just her ambition. When I go to schools and share Millie's life story, I have a picture of Millie's baby shoes. And there's two things that are very interesting, one of which is that they have blue ribbons, which prior to World War II, blue was the color for boys and pink, blue was the color for girls and pink for boys, and that transitioned and changed for some reason. And if you look at the bottom of the shoes, they're all scuffed up. So say, you know, Millie was going from a very early age. She just had a nonstop, very energized, very strong personality.
When I went to visit her in Toledo when she was in her late 80s, I wanted to have lunch with her, and she said, well, you'll have to come on Saturday because I work during the week. And she said, you know, I have to keep my job.
Wow. And she continued working at the Toledo Blade until her death, right?
Yeah, she didn't feel well, went home and died.
Wow. So in the autobiography and in your conversations with Millie, did she talk about writing under her own name and what that meant to her, Carolyn?
No, she didn't. What I've been thinking about in reading the autobiography is that she regarded all of these things as a paycheck. At first, the $125 that she was paid was good pay, more than she would have gotten as a reporter. But later on, the pay didn't increase, and some of the series weren't particularly profitable. She didn't get any royalties anyway. And after the last book that she wrote, she had a period of writer's block, as she described it. And one of the things that went through her mind is, Why? Who am I writing these for? Why am I writing them? I'm not getting a lot of money. I don't need the money. So she stopped writing at that time and decided that she would have the adventures herself as opposed to write them.
And I want to talk a lot more about that after we get back from a break, because she did some really remarkable things. But before the break, she also married again. She was raising her daughter, although she had a great deal of help, I believe, from her mother in raising her daughter. But tell me a little bit about her second husband, Julie.
Her husband was George Benson, who was the editor of The Times. And I think I have not had the benefit of reading her autobiography, so that was not revealed when I had met with Millie's family. So I'm looking forward to seeing that and reading that at some point in time. But I would surmise as well that with his position and with the financial well-being that he brought to the marriage, that there wasn't, as Carolyn has said, there wasn't really as much as a push for her to have to be as financially driven by her writing. So because her writing kind of correlates to the time, or when she stepped away from it, correlates with the time that she became married to George Benson. And George, although Asa was by all accounts a good husband to her, her family, Millie's family, has indicated that George Benson was truly the love of her life.
And that marriage sadly did not last very long. What happened?
He died suddenly as well before they were to, just before he was, they were to take a vacation. So Millie suffered the loss of two husbands at a fairly early age, and very tragic.
How long were they married before he died? Do you know?
I don't recall that.
Nine years.
So we have to take a short break coming up here in just a moment. But before we get to the break, Millie's journalism career was something that she had to pursue to pay the bills. But, Carolyn, was it also something that she took a great deal of pride and joy in?
She did. She covered courts and City Hall for the Toledo Times, which was owned by the Toledo Blade. And ultimately, after George died, the Times ended and she was transferred to the Toledo Blade. There she didn't do the same kind of reporting, probably because there were other reporters there already covering the same beat. So she did mostly feature writing and columns.
All right. And we're going to talk about some of the adventures that she had personally in those later years in just a moment. You're also welcome to join our conversation. Is Nancy Drew a character that has been important to you in your life? Share your story. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This hour, we're talking about the life of Millie Benson. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Carolyn Dyer, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa, and Julie Rubini, author of the new book for young readers, Missing Millie Benson, The Secret Case of the Ghostwriter and Journalist. We are talking about the woman behind the Nancy Drew series. Of course, it was a series written by a number of different authors, but Millie Benson wrote 23 of the first 30 Nancy Drew books. She also wrote so many other books during her life, both under pseudonyms and also under her own name. And before the break, we were talking about this point in her life. She had lost her second husband. She was a journalist. She was a writer. But she also became inspired to get out and have her own adventures. And she really fell in love with aviation. And Julie, tell me about the first blush of that love affair with aviation.
Well, she was just a little girl, and there was a barnstormer flying, you know, as they would across the country and allowing individuals to go up in air. And I believe it was a $5 fee, which Millie just happened to have. And apparently her father didn't even know about her going up in the air, which is just amazing to me. And she fell in love with it as a child. And I think that stuck with her. And as she was writing about these adventures and these independent women, I'm sure that, you know, flying came into play there as well. And then ultimately, later on in life, as she was a reporter for, as Carolyn has stated, for both the Times and then ultimately the Blade, that she began writing about female pilots and was so intrigued with aviation that she responded to an ad for, she was doing an article about flight and responded to an ad about, and there was a coupon for taking flights and flying lessons, and she kind of made light of herself saying that was the most expensive, you know, coupon that she ever used. Because ultimately then she began taking flying lessons, and it was kind of fun for me that it was often stated that she obtained her private pilot's license when she was 59. She actually began taking her lessons when she was 59 and obtained her license when she was 62 years of age. And that information is reflected in her logbooks, which are at the Toledo Lucas County Library Archives, that just as the University of Iowa has an incredible collection, the Toledo Library, Lucas County Library System, has some of Millie's items, since Millie spent so many years in Toledo with us. And those logbooks were a reflection of when she was taking those lessons.
And she had written a series about a woman pilot. Ruth Darrow was the name of her pilot. And this was a series she published under her own name, right?
Yes. And it was really loosely based on the life of Ruth Elder, who there is a picture of Ruth in the book as well, very attractive young woman. And she was one of the very early pilots. And to me, it was very fascinating to learn more about the Powder Puff Air Derby and the flights across the country that literally landed in Millie's backyard in Lakewood, Ohio, when she was there. And so I can't help but think that all of those historical events occurring also piqued her interest and led to writing about these series and then ultimately becoming a pilot herself.
Well, and Carolyn, so she became a pilot. She was having these kind of remarkable adventures herself, and her journalism got more adventurous as well, right?
Yeah, she wrote actually mostly freelance stories for other publications on some of her adventures in Central America.
And so she did a great deal of traveling, which was a bug that she got very early in her life. And Julie, it seemed to me that she was writing kind of inspirational columns for other people as well, sharing her adventures.
Yes, and I think, again, she just had such a can-do spirit about her. And it, you know, to any of us to think about taking flying lessons at 59 and getting your pilot's license at 62, as I suggested, a time where, you know, many may be finishing their careers and seeking retirement, Millie didn't slow down. I make the joke in school presentations that she picked up ground speed. I mean, she just. I am so enthralled and very sadly never had the opportunity to meet Millie as is covered in the author's notes in the beginning of my book, but I so wish that I had. I just so admire her ambition and all of the things that she accomplished and continued to do. And to Millie, it was just she had an interest, so she pursued it. It wasn't in her mindset anything incredible that she was doing, which makes it even more of a story.
Well, and Carolyn, you had the opportunity to know her at least a little bit. What was she like?
She if there is a stereotype of a newspaper man in the 1930s, she was it. She was kind of gruff and no nonsense. After the Nancy Drew conference and after I published my book, I got lots of calls from reporters from around the world wanting to know how to get in touch with her so they could interview her, and I would give them the phone number at the newspaper. And quite often, the person would call me back sometimes later and say, "Have you ever met her?" And they would tell a story that she would say, "So what's your lead?" And they would tell him what they thought the lead might be, and she said, "That's not very good. You won't get that published."
It's funny. The very first person that I met with before I had the opportunity to get out to Iowa was Thomas Walton, who is the retired editor and was Millie's editor at The Blade and just is a lifelong man and an incredible writer himself. And he said to me that Millie didn't suffer fools lightly.
Yeah.
And she didn't. You know, she was very, you know, no nonsense, just very businesslike and, yes, gruff. And it was very fun to see not only the interviews of her for the incredible documentary that WGTE here in Toledo created called The Storied Life of Millie Benson, but to see the outtakes from that, to see what wasn't included in there, and to see Millie when she thought she was off camera. And, you know, that very strong, no-nonsense personality came through. And yet she had softness around her edges, which was very nice to see, too.
We're going to go to the phones. George is on the line in Mason City. Hi, George.
Well, hello. I'm just incredibly excited to be a part of the conversation today. My given name is actually Marianne, but I've been George since about sixth grade, and it's because I was a huge fan of the Nancy Drew books as a young person.
And for people who aren't big fans of the books, so what's the connection between the name George and Nancy Drew?
Nancy has two sidekicks, George and Bess, and they're cousins. And Bess is blonde and twists her ankle a lot, and she's afraid to go into the haunted houses. But George is really game for everything. And so I was kind of a tomboy. And, it fit. And when the moniker was placed on me, I cultivated it.
Nice.
Because I liked it so much.
That's great.
So it really became part of your identity.
Indeed. And when I was in college, I was a literature English major in college, and my professors would sometimes ask, so is this for George Eliot or George Sand? And I would say, well, it's literary, but not quite of that in that echelon. I just had a couple of questions and a comment. The comment is that I learned a lot of vocabulary through Nancy Drew. I remember learning the word vehement because I was mispronouncing it because I'd only ever seen it on the page. And I remember learning the word Titian, which, I had never encountered before. And I was kind of wondering who gave her Titian hair, who gave Nancy Titian hair, because it's somewhat of a transgressive color in literature. That's one question. And let's see, I had written down a few notes here. Oh, the absent mother, which was mentioned before. I was wondering how prevalent Millie's mother had been, or whether the absent mother was something that Edward Stratemeyer imposed on the series. Because, we know that her mother's been gone since Nancy was three and Hannah came. But we never learn her name or anything about her.
Interesting.
My last comment is that as a 10-year-old, I firmly believed that adults would pay attention to what a 16-year-old had to say like that. So I was quite disappointed when I grew a bit older and discovered that that's not actually how the world works. Anyway.
Oh, George, thank you so much for calling. So, well, let's, Julie, I think we'll give you a try here on the Titian hair, which is a fancy way to say red hair. So do we know about that?
I don't know about that. Maybe Carolyn can speak to that.
No, I don't know. And her hair color and her car color change as time goes on. And depending upon how old people are, they have different pictures of Nancy Drew in their mind. But I don't know where the Titian came from. But Millie was, was a voracious reader. I don't know where she learned vehement, but... she was a voracious reader and considering that she was hired to start writing these books when she was in her early 20s suggests that she was pretty facile with words.
Definitely. And her mother was a presence in her life. And of course, I mean, so many books for young readers involve orphans or at least one absent parent. It's a plot device that we see a lot of authors for young readers use. Julie, did that come from the Stratemeyer Syndicate?
I do believe that, and Carolyn could confirm this as well. I believe that that came from the Stratemeyer Syndicate from the get-go. Is that the
That's true, and that's how you get an adventurous girl in particular, lacking the stereotypical mother's role. And Mildred wrote in her autobiography that her mother kept telling her that she wasn't, she couldn't do things because she was a girl, and that made Mildred resist. And her mother, according to her, got used to the fact that she was in a losing battle.
and ended up getting written out of most of the books, even the ones that Mildred wrote under her own name had absent mothers. Rhonda is on the line. Hello, Rhonda.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I want to tell you I'm a reading teacher for elementary school, and just this last week, the kids had asked me what is my favorite book, and I brought in all my 1949 Nancy Drew books that I had read and explained how she was my favorite author in the world because I didn't have a mom growing up, and this your program. I'm traveling from Missouri to see my sister in Minneapolis, and to come across your radio station talking about something I just tried to get the students to understand is overwhelming. I didn't know anything about Nancy Drew, and some of the parallels of her life, I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. I have a husband who passed away. I learned how to fly a plane when I was 50, and this is amazing. I'm just overwhelmed, and thank you so much for this information. It's going to help so much when I teach.
Oh, Rhonda, thank you so much for your call. What a beautiful case of serendipity today.
Yeah, it really is. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, and drive safely. And we have just a few minutes left, and I want to turn to you, Julie. So when did it come out that Millie Benson was the originator of Nancy Drew? This was quite dramatic.
I don't know if Rhonda's still on the line, but I would love to connect with her somehow, so whether we can do that after the fact. But she touched upon some things that are very dear to me, both loss as well as the amazing universe and how it all brings us together here. So I'm very touched by her words. But as far as Millie, and I'm sorry, go ahead again with the question.
Right. So how did this come to light that Millie was the woman behind Nancy Drew?
Well, as my book begins with that trial in 1980, which was right on the heels of the 50th anniversary of the Nancy Drew series, where Harriet Stratemeyer Adams had been proclaiming, and it was published in Time magazine, that she was the author of all of the Nancy Drews. And it was a matter of the Grosset and Dunlap had been the publisher for many years and had provided a standard royalty to the Stratemeyer Syndicate for many years, and Harriet ultimately went to Simon & Schuster to become a publisher, and you can well imagine that did not sit well or bode well with Grosset and Dunlap. So there was indeed this trial that involved who had the rights to the Nancy Drew series, both in the past as well as into the future, and Grosset and Dunlap brought Millian as a witness to try and establish who indeed had written the Nancy Drews as part of the case. And so it was in 1980 that finally Millie publicly and in a grand scale became known as Carolyn Keene. And yet what's very interesting to me, and Carolyn Dyer and I had these conversations when I was there in Iowa, that was 1980, and yet it wasn't until the awesome Nancy Drew conference that...
In 1993.
Yes.
So Carolyn, you really brought this to the forefront. You're the person that brought it to the world that Millie Benson was.
Yes, I have to tell you that celebrity didn't rest too easily on Millie Benson. She regarded fans as kind of an annoyance, although I think she secretly was pleased to finally get recognition. She, in fact, had been working with a lawyer to get recognition from Simon & Schuster and Grosset and Dunlap, and it wasn't until we had the editor of the Nancy Drew series at the conference, and the editor saw what kind of person that Millie was, that within the next year they negotiated that she could be acknowledged as the writer of the first books. And I just happened to be in Sweden when I saw the first book with acknowledging Nancy in it. She regarded herself as still under the prohibition of identifying herself, so except within certain small groups of people, and some people around Toledo especially, they didn't know. It wasn't until the conference that people learned that she was the writer.
Wow. Well, thank you both so much for sharing Millie's real story with us today. Carolyn Dyer, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa. She also co-edited Rediscovering Nancy Drew after that conference in 1993. Carolyn, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Julie Rubini, thank you so much.
And you are welcome, and thank you.
Julie Rubini is author of the new book for young readers, Missing Millie Benson, The Secret Case of the Ghostwriter and Journalist. This is Talk of Iowa.